Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily College Podcast for the 22nd day of August, 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for rating and reviewing it on iTunes. We're up over 800 star reviews now, which is super cool. And let me click on it really quickly. 224 written reviews. The milestone's 225, so whoever does the next one gets no prize, but I'll thank them in advance. Yes, lots of stuff to get to, tons of things to talk about. If you want to enter to win the signed Charlie Hurt book, Still Winning, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and let me know. Don't just email me randomly, say, hey, what's up? Because I won't know that you want in on the drawing. I'll just say, nothing. What's up with you? Or something. I'll keep you guessing. But if you say that you want to be entered into the drawing, you shall be entered into the drawing. And it's just that easy. Everybody wins, except for the people who don't win. Everybody else loses. But, you know, you're a winner anyway. So there you go. All right, like I said, lots of stuff to get to. I have a little bit of an update on a personal note that I mentioned on the show last week, I think, or so. I'm sitting on the couch staring at a cat, and it's not one of our normal cats. I caught that little bugger that has been living under our shed, stuffed him into a cat carrier yesterday. It was my wife's birthday, and I'd given her a cat on her birthday like 9 years ago. And now we got another one. I don't know if we're going to keep him or not, but he's done nothing but sleep all day. They took him, checked him under the hood, made sure that he was clean and everything, and he's thrilled as hell to be inside and enjoying not having things try to eat him, because there are fox that come through the neighborhood. I think there's a possum or raccoons that live under the shed, too, or at least I've seen him run under there. So now he's sleeping on the couch. Couldn't be happier. I wish I were sleeping, but I got to talk to you. It's all good. But yeah, he's a little bugger. Nice. We've taken to calling him Kivy because my daughter Quinn, the two-year-old, says, oh, Kivy's outside. That's how she pronounces kitty. The other cat, she knows their names. So now it's the generic Kivy. But he's cute and friendly and likes being petted, so that's all good. All right, lots of stuff to get to. I don't know if we're going to keep him or not. We're going to keep him for a couple days and see how the other cats react. It's a standoff at this point. Mostly Kivy sleeps, and the other just kind of walk around and watching him sleep, going, what in the hell is that? All right, we got lots of things to talk about. We've got the president making a joke, and it's a damn funny joke, and the media can't handle it. They are incapable. When did all journalists become joyless, humorless lumps of human flesh? Honest to God, I don't know what happened to this country, but somewhere along the line, the left lost their collective minds and with it their sense of humor. What the president said was clearly and obviously a joke, but they can't take a joke. Donald Trump is not allowed to. We also have The Simpsons. I love how they're saying, well, they're taking on Trump. Like, oh, you're so brave. You're a freaking cartoon, and you're taking on the president of the United States. Like, you're not challenging him to a duel or anything. You made a little cartoon that is unfunny. Then we have an update on an illegal alien story that swept the nation. And by the nation, I mean newsrooms across the country where they were talking about, oh, this is an example of immigration and ICE and Border Patrol. Their cruelty, their meanness. It turns out that it was a big bunch of horse manure. But I want to start off by telling you about, of course, our sponsor, Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a game changer. I've been drinking it for about 3 weeks now, and it has made a big difference. I got a lot more energy. I got more pep in my step, if you know what I mean. I was able to catch a stray cat, for God's sakes. A feral cat, probably, although he's pretty calm. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. Let's face it, food was different in the past when our parents were growing up. It was minimally processed, if at all. It was free of pesticides. It was nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, processed like you wouldn't believe. So not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and that heavy processing I was telling you about have depleted the nutrition in our food. It's no wonder you feel so run down. So you got to try Life Change Tea. And so many of you have been emailing me saying, oh, I've ordered it. I got it. And I appreciate the heck out of it. I can't even tell you how much. All you got to do to try it for yourself is go to getthetea.com. It's all one word. Go to getthetea.com now and get ready for more energy. It's a gentle daily cleanse, so make sure that you follow the instructions. I've heard stories of people like, no, I'll just drink this tea, and they just chug it. Like, no, don't do that. Follow the instructions. They're very explicit. You got to get that filth out of you so that your body can absorb the good stuff in your food. I drink it every day. Like I said, it's not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And as an added bonus, it's apparently all been fixed now. If you enter the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, I'm not a deep water oil drilling device, and at checkout, you'll get free shipping. So you can't beat it. Boom. Get to keep more money in your pocket. Get to get that ugh out of you. I don't know how you'd spell ugh if I was reading if somebody's going to transcribe this, but you got to get that ugh out of you and get the energy. Get your life back. LifeChangeTea.com because it changes your life. Or it's actually GetTheTea.com. It's LifeChangeTea because it changes your life. All right, let's talk about this joke that the president told. He was speaking at a ceremony. I mean, this is so ridiculous. It was a 75th anniversary of the National Convention for the American Veterans, the AMVETS. And the president's there, and he's doing what presidents always do. He's acknowledging people in the crowd. And at some point, the president acknowledges somebody who won the Medal of Honor, a guy named Woody Williams. And the president says, you're looking good, Woody. And he jokes about how he thought about, you know, maybe awarding himself the Medal of Honor. And he said, well, they didn't think that'd be a very good idea. The crowd was laughing. And it was clearly a joke, but you would never know it by the way that it has been breathlessly reported by so-called journalists. Before I get to the reporting on it, just so there's no ambiguity, let's listen to the President of the United States make a joke about himself. That's the thing that gets people so riled up about Donald Trump, is he has a self-deprecating sense of humor. It's missed because he's also got a lot of hubris. He's also, you know, he's a very confident man. He is, some people would call that arrogance. Whatever you call it, that with a self-deprecating sense of humor don't necessarily go hand in hand very often. People who love themselves, who really, really love themselves, would never make any jokes about themselves because they don't think that anything about them is funny. They think they're deadly serious. Donald Trump is different, and this is what makes Donald Trump relatable to people. I always ask guests on the show when we do the Friday interviews, people who know the president, why is it that this billionaire who's, you know, hasn't always been a billionaire, but he's always been a multi-millionaire. How is it that this incredibly wealthy guy can relate to a guy who works on a farm in Nebraska, a guy who digs ditches in Oklahoma, a roofer in Colorado? How is it that this billionaire can relate to them? And part of it is this self-deprecating humor. Donald Trump's been around construction. He's been around blue-collar construction guys his whole life. That helps, too. They're not the blue-collar American worker, as they like to refer to them, is not some sort of zoo animal that he goes and visits every once in a while like it is for most politicians, particularly wealthy liberal politicians. So they treat, oh, I'm going to Iowa. I'm going to a diner to rub shoulders with real Americans. That's a little bit condescending. Like, I'm going to go Dane, and then I'm going to take a Silkwood shower. I'm going to get deloused, get back on my private jet, and get back to the coast as quickly as possible, and regale my fellow progressives with tales of how I once slummed it at a diner in Des Moines. But that does happen. It really, it's the sense that people get. That's why Iowa and New Hampshire are important, is they're so used to it that they sort of detect that in people. The politicians that come to Iowa constantly, they leave the people with a good impression or a bad impression. And the ones that are a bad impression are the ones who really do. They have the assistant behind them with the Purell. They are giving canned answers to normal human questions. They know, you can tell when somebody's not comfortable talking to you. I get it a lot. But Donald Trump doesn't give that. It's because, and having worked construction, roofing and concrete work, having done some, I was an electrician's aide for one summer and a union gig at the University of Michigan Dearborn, digging literal ditches and laying PVC pipe that wire would be blown through later, filling them with concrete. It was fine work. But you get to talking to these guys a lot. When you're doing construction work, there's a lot of BSing that goes on about what you did last night, what you're doing this weekend, your latest friend who got drunk and did something stupid, or this chick you met, or whatever it is. You talk about that, and you all rip on each other. And if you can't take a joke about yourself, you will eat lunch alone for the entirety of that job. No one will want anything to do with you. That's all they do is rip on each other. And they do it in a way that rips on themselves, too. I make jokes about everybody, and I make jokes about myself. I personally think the jokes about myself are much funnier, but that's just me. The average politician doesn't have that gene. And the Democratic left now doesn't have that gene at all. They've had it genetically modified out of them, bred out of them. Maybe they did it through eugenics. Who knows? That's part of why Donald Trump can be identifiable to people who will never get within two zeros of Donald Trump's annual income. But someone like Elizabeth Warren, I mean, she's got $15 million or whatever it is. But do you really think Elizabeth Warren, it's the beer test. It's the, if you're digging a trench with somebody, is that 8 hours going to feel like 16 hours because they're just annoying to be around? Or is it going to feel like 4 hours? You go, holy crap, it's lunch already. I didn't even realize that. When you have a good crew working on a construction site doing any sort of manual labor, if you're able to be ripping each other and having conversations about whatever's going on, time goes by much faster. Donald Trump gives that feeling off. None of the Democrats really. Could you imagine being in a ditch with Cory Booker, digging it, and having to listen to Cory Booker try and regale you with sad tales of woe of growing up the son of two IBM executives? But I had it rough. Don't worry about that. Or Joe Biden rewriting history every time he opens his mouth. So the left has no sense of humor, and they really can't relate to real people. It's kind of pathetic, really, because they try to portray themselves as the protectors of real people, and they don't seem to realize that real people, real Americans in the middle of the country, don't want the government to protect them. They want to be able to protect themselves. They mostly just want to be left the hell alone. Anyway, I'm straying. I want to play for you the president speaking at the AmVets event yesterday, their 75th annual convention, making a joke about awarding himself the Medal of Honor. Listen.
Congratulations as well to this year's recipients of the Silver Helmet Awards, especially a dear friend who is an inspiration to all Americans, World War II veteran and Medal of Honor recipient, Woody Williams. Here's Woody. Thank you, Woody. You're looking good, Woody. Woody's looking good. That was a big day. Medal of Honor. Nothing like the Medal of Honor. I wanted one, but they told me I don't qualify, Woody. I said, can I give it to myself anyway? They said, I don't think that's a good idea. Great, great people. These are great, great men and women that get the Congressional Medal of Honor.
You hear the joke? You heard the joke. If you saw the clip, you saw the joke. It was mostly pretty easy to spot because of the laughter and the tone of the president's voice. Now, a normal human would kind of either find it funny or not. That's up to you. That's up to somebody's individual choice in humor. But a journalist, well, they're a different breed of cat. The Politico, their headline. Trump says he wanted to give himself Medal of Honor. You're like, what? This was written by a particularly joyless human being named Quint Forgy. Forgay? I don't know. F-O-R-G-E-Y. Quint Forgay. I'd be mad if that were my name, too. He writes, President Donald Trump claimed to laughter on Wednesday that he sought to give himself the Medal of Honor, but decided not to after being counseled against the move by aides. Now, it's kind of funny. He claimed to laughter. He claimed to laughter. He told a joke, but he's writing it as though the laughter greeted the president, and he may or may not have been serious. Who knows? Who knows? But the laughter, he made the claim, and it was greeted with laughter. Could have gone either way. It might have been completely, totally serious. Quint continues, the offhand remark from the president came during his address to the 75th Annual National Convention of American Veterans, a volunteer-led service organization also known as AMVETS. At the event in Louisville, Kentucky, Trump singled out for praise a World War II veteran and Medal of Honor recipient, Woody Williams. Thank you, Woody. You're looking good, Woody. Woody's looking good, Trump said. That's a big day, Medal of Honor. Nothing like the Medal of Honor, he continued. I wanted one, but they told me I didn't qualify, Woody. I said, can I give it to myself anyway? They said, I don't think it's a good idea. Amid scattered chuckles, Trump concluded, great, great people. They were great men and women that get the... These are great men and women that get the Congressional Medal of Honor. Thank you, Woody. Then Quint gets back to his opinion, couched as news. The president's assessment that he should receive the nation's highest award for acts of military valor followed his statement earlier Wednesday afternoon that he is, quote, the chosen one, in relation to his administration's trade conflict with China, a proclamation he turned to the sky to deliver. The president's remarks earlier in the day where he was talking on the way to this event, actually, as he was going out to the helicopter, he was talking about the decades of growing trade deficits with China, and saying that other presidents should have addressed this. This should have been addressed long ago, but they didn't do it. So I guess I'm the chosen one. And he looked up at the sky like, thanks, God, as another bit of a joke. But when you put it in print, and when you put only quotes around the chosen one, it gives a different sense, doesn't it? I'm the chosen one. Makes you think that I'm special. God has ordained me to do this. No one else could do it. When in reality, what the president was actually saying is somebody else should have done this, but it needs to be done, so I got to do it. Since nobody got off their ass and did this in the last 20 years. None of the presidents before me bothered to address this issue, so I'm going to do it. And it gets reported in Politico's, and he's looked to the heavens, and he said, I'm the chosen one. And at that point, the thunder crackled and the lightning cut the sky. This is not a joke. This is what Politico wrote. This is a news story. The last sentence in this story, and this is the entirety of the story. They haven't acknowledged that the president was joking. They just said that what he said about giving himself the Medal of Honor was greeted with laughter. And it was, the last sentence reads, Trump never served in the military and was granted 5 draft deferments, 4 for college and 1 for bone spurs in his heel. Again, the president told a joke. The liberal media, with their Trump derangement syndrome, immediately chose to ignore that it was obviously a joke and chose to try to take it seriously, at which point they unzipped their collective pants and squatted over it, trying to take a dump on it. I don't think it works. Anybody who actually hears the audio or sees the video, it's pretty clear he was joking. But you've got the producer for MSNBC who produces The Last Word with Larry O'Donnell. He tweets it out, says, quote, Trump claimed today that he sought to give himself a Medal of Honor, but decided not to after being counseled against the move by aides. Like, you have no sense of humor? I mean, looking at Kyle's user picture, I don't think he does have a sense of humor. Whoever does his hair does, but he doesn't. And then there's Daniel Dale, who writes over at CNN. I believe he's part of their fact-check team. I could be wrong about that. It doesn't matter. He does work for CNN. He tweets out, Trump, who got draft deferments to avoid Vietnam service, on the Medal of Honor with a smile. Quote, I wanted one, but they told me I don't qualify. I said, could I give it to myself anyway? They said, I don't think it's a good idea. Then he followed that up, recognizing that he was a complete douchebag and taking things out of context, and people were pointing this out to him. He says, quote, Trump was smiling when he said this, and people in the crowd did laugh. I'm just personally wary of declaring he's joking about anything because, like, buying Greenland. That was his whole response. Eh, they might have been joking. I don't see the humor in it. Being a joyless liberal myself and just going home to a bare-walled studio apartment where I sit and sulk and cry myself to sleep every night, I don't see the humor in this. These people are... You wouldn't want to be, you know, like, would you rather be stuck on a stranded island with this or that or the other thing? None of these people. I don't care what the other choice is. Not these people. Although, you might kill them. Not even worth it. These are who the left is. It's not just them. Like, there were countless examples of this. But it is so painfully obvious that the president of the United States is telling a joke. And it is so painfully obvious that these people either don't get it or don't want to get it, don't understand humor, don't appreciate humor. These are the people who storm out of comedy shows because he was making fun of somebody else. Can you believe that comedian was making fun of that person over there or making fun of somebody who went out on a date with them? This is an outrage. This is not acceptable. This is part of the rape culture, and we cannot sit here idly. If we don't do anything, we're part of the problem. Comedy is dead. I don't watch the late night shows. I never really watched the late night shows. I never made a point. Maybe if there was somebody I was really interested in and was on one of the late night talk shows, I'd watch it. But that happens so infrequently. But when I do see clips on social media or see the news stories, and there's a whole chapter of this in my book about how the late night comedians are, it's called Bias by Proxy is the name of the chapter, about how these comedians aren't really comedians anymore. They don't give jokes. A joke is a setup and a punchline. Setup and a punchline. For late nights, the comedians, the host comes out, they deliver their monologue. It's setup, punchline, setup, punchline, setup, punchline. Here's who we got on the show. Here's the band. We'll be back in a second. That's the formula of it. Thanks to Stephen Colbert, that's dead. That doesn't exist anymore. It is political speech punctuated by an applause line, which is distinctly different from a joke, a punchline. A punchline is designed to get laughs. An applause line is designed to get a bunch of mindless drones who agree with you to applaud you. And he does get applause. His show's filmed in New York City. You're not going to find too many conservatives there, and not many of them are going to waste an hour at 4 o'clock to sit in a theater until 7 o'clock to watch a 1 hour show that they could DVR and skip and watch the whole thing in 20 minutes at home if they wanted to. But that's what these have become. They're political lectures, ignorant of history, ignorant of reality, written essentially. It was, what was his name? Jimmy Kimmel admitted that he got a lot of his healthcare talking points from Chuck Schumer's office. Like, where's the humor in that? You're supposed to be a comedian. This is supposed to be a funny show. And you end up crying on your show every third day about something going on legislatively? Shouldn't the real problem be not who the president is, but that your life and the lives of so many people are impacted by who the president is, who the Speaker of the House is, what happens in Washington, D.C.? Our government was never designed to impact people's lives. Our federal government, anyway, was never designed to impact people's lives so dramatically that they would root for a political party like a freaking sports team and live and die with the results. But that's what's happened to our government. It is so big now, and the Democrats view it as a team sport, and they're all on board. And they've killed comedy in the process. And if anybody needs a laugh, it's these joyless left, although a really good comedy, a really good joke, anything would be wasted on these people. I call it Michael Stipe's disease, the lead singer of REM, who just seemed joyless no matter what was going on in his life. Somebody somewhere is suffering. How can you have fun now? But yeah, great. Thanks for bringing your friend. Is he a mortician? Why is he at this party? Speaking of comedy being dead, The Simpsons, they're going on season 742 or whatever. I used to like The Simpsons. Now I think it's just played out. Nothing against The Simpsons. I think they should actually start aging the kids, because I think you've done everything you can possibly do with a fourth grader, and they've probably done it two or three times by now. Maybe try something living on the edge. Try a fifth grader or sixth grader. Get the kids aging, and then maybe you can come up with something interesting. They released, and I don't know if this is probably part of their new season. See, the problem with The Simpsons, what makes South Park so great, and a little bit of a tangent here, South Park is made from nothing to air in 6 days. There's a great documentary, used to be on Netflix, I think, called 6 Days to Air, about the making of South Park, of one particular episode. They get together, they decide what the episode is going to be. It's all done on computers. It's done rather quickly. They do the voices, they put it all together, and up until air, they're able to change it if they need to or want to. When it comes to shows like The Simpsons, I think they're still drawn in South Korea. Most of the animation, that's actual animation and not computer animation, is drawn in South Korea for some weird reason. It's not like it's a job Americans won't do. It's a job that liberals in Hollywood don't want to pay the going rate to Americans to do. So they're shipping it off to South Korea. Well, it takes a long time to draw an episode. So you end up with a show that is supposed to be, you know, culturally relevant and hip, and they're making jokes about something that's 6 or 9 months old. This one is a clip of the President of the United States. I'm going to play it for you. It's a song. It's apparently some song from West Side Story. I think I watched West Side Story late night one night on cable in the last year, mostly to see what all the hype was about. And I thought it was it just wasn't for me. But I suffered through it because it's supposed to be this big classic. If you love West Side Story, don't email me. You're not going to convince me to love West Side Story. You're not going to convince. You can't convince somebody to like something based on taste. You can convince somebody of a factual error. You can change somebody's mind on their opinions on some things. But if it's a matter of taste, I either like steak or I don't like steak. I either like Captain Crunch or I don't like Captain Crunch. You either like West Side Story or you don't like West Side Story. And I fall into the non-nerd side of not liking West Side Story. But this is apparently a mock of that. It's Donald Trump versus the Gang of Four. And it's bad. It's bad. I want to swear about it just because, but listen to it for yourself.
So many problems, tariffs. I need a distraction. They shouldn't be in America. No one but me in America. No taxes for me in America. This is my natural America.
We're more American than your wife.
She's not a big presence in my life.
Your love life makes us heave.
You two will never see Tel Aviv.
You're greasing your palm with emoluments.
It's okay with God, says Mike Pence.
You're Boris Johnson without the class. Can't wait to see you behind prison glass. Your nose is right up Putin's ass. We say it's time to impeach you fast.
Oh no, it's the Democratic candidates. Can't be the first one to lose my breath. Can't be the first one to fall.
Who's an old man now?
That's what they released. This is how they're teasing the new season. I mean, I would use it to tease the new season and say, hey, new season, you're not funny. Look at this. You're all so fat, you're balding, and you got bad breath. But if I'm going to tease the new season, that's what I would do. The president of the United States has created Trump derangement syndrome, or exposed this derangement syndrome. It's really Republican derangement syndrome. It just blossomed into a full-blown epidemic under Trump. They were just as joyless. There were just fewer of them, and they were less vocal about it under George W. Bush. It was the fringe. It was the what was her name? Cindy Sheehan's of the world, the Code Pinks. This is enough. You notice how the anti-war movement disappeared for like 8 years there? Barack Obama started more wars, got us into more wars than any president in recent history, and there was no visible anti-war movement in the media. Then suddenly they're back. Suddenly you start hearing about Code Pink again. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just wanted to point out how just joyless these people have become. How awful these people have. President makes a joke and they can't handle it. The Simpsons try to make a joke and they can't land it. And late night TV is nothing but early convention coverage. I don't know why people watch it. I don't understand why liberals want to be miserable all the time. They might not be so annoying if they weren't so miserable all the time, but I don't think that'll change anytime soon. On the immigration front, this story is something to behold. Does the name Maria Domingo Garcia mean anything to you? Maybe, maybe not, but the details of her story might. Back on August 7th, the ICE raids down in Mississippi, remember those? When they scooped up 680 illegal immigrants. By the way, hundreds of Americans showed up because those plants needed to replace those people, the poultry processing plants and what have you. Americans showed. I thought those were jobs that Americans didn't want to do. And now suddenly Americans are showing up applying for these jobs. Weird. It's almost like our leaders are lying to us. But she was one of them that was swept up in those raids for being in the country illegally. She became a media sensation when her story got out that she was breastfeeding her four-month-old child, and the mean old ICE agents would not let her have her child or release her to go to her child and continue breastfeeding. She was saying, you know, I need to go home. I have to breastfeed my baby. Well, it turns out that that was a lie. She was saying that, let's see, this is from the Daily Caller. Lawyers admonished ICE for separating her away from her baby and described the physical toll of abruptly ceasing to breastfeed was having on her body. Quote, She's still really depressed. She's in a lot of pain because of not being able to pump or breastfeed. Juliana Marizanez, I don't know what the hell that last name is, one of two lawyers said to CNN. CNN dutifully reported it because CNN is a stenographer for the left. Doesn't matter how absurd a claim is. Doesn't matter if there's no proof to back up a claim. If it's claimed in the name of liberalism, they're down with it and they shall report it unquestioned. Well, ICE conducted a medical exam of the woman, Domingo Garcia. In response to those claims, and a nurse practitioner found that she was not lactating. It's a strong indication that she was not breastfeeding her baby. That'd be like, you know, I'm breastfeeding with a rock, but you know what? It's the act rather than the result that matters. So she was lying. Because, of course, when somebody makes a claim like this, they will check it out. They will look into it. The journalists won't. The media won't. But ICE will. Well, now, Maria Domingo Garcia has been slapped with a bunch of felony charges. For what? For using another person's social security number to get jobs in the United States. That's right. Identity theft. We always see all of these commercials and all the politicians and everybody in government is warning you, identity, protect your personal information. Somebody calls you from the IRS saying that you owe money. Don't believe them. The IRS is not going to call you. Do not give them any personal information over the phone. Blah, blah. Don't give it over the internet. So on and so forth. Those people who are warning you, somebody's identity is stolen every 2.5 nanoseconds. Those people don't care when an American's ID is stolen, identity is stolen, by an illegal alien to get work in this country. Now, what's the problem there? That's just somebody paying extra money into your Social Security. If they aren't withholding enough in taxes or they aren't withholding any taxes and they're working on your Social Security number and you go to file your taxes and you think, hey, I'm going to get a nice juicy refund. Right now, it's going to be great. Going to be able to pay off some bills or take a vacation or whatever. Then the IRS comes back and says, "Hey, you forgot on your forms there the $40,000 you made at the poultry packing plant down in Georgia. I understand that you live in Wyoming, but you know, maybe you commuted for it." It screws over people. Also, if you're running around with somebody's Social Security number, it's pretty easy to get a fake ID made off that Social Security number. And it's pretty easy to get a credit card with that amount of information off of somebody. Identity theft is real. Our politicians do warn us about it for good reason. They just stop caring about it if the alleged perpetrator has a last name like Domingo Garcia. Can't imagine why that would be, can you? In other news in the presidential front news, Bernie Sanders. Remember Bernie Sanders? He looks like Doc Brown from Back to the Future. That crazy guy who looks like he slept in his suit inside a bag of potato chips all the time. At least that's what he looked like to me when he used to walk past us while we were drinking at a place called Union Pub. The Washington Post has this story. If you hearken back to the hearken, why did I use that word? That's a word you don't hear a lot of. If you think back or hearken, you're free to hearken. If you think back to the Democratic debates, Bernie Sanders, when the issue of health care came up, was absolutely certain. It doesn't matter what kind of plan you have now, we're going to give you something better, and you're going to lose your plan, but you're going to get something better, and you're going to like it more. Trust me, don't worry about it, it's going to be better. He insisted, and the questions kept coming up. Well, what about, because Democrats don't care about non-union people, they don't care about, you know, anybody who doesn't pay forced dues to organizations that cut Democrats huge checks. So you working in an office or you working in a non-union factory who get your health insurance through your employer and you like it, screw you. You can lose it. Who cares? Bernie doesn't give a damn. You're not contributing to his campaign. But unions, the union guys, they weren't super happy about it. because they, in some cases, have negotiated themselves some pretty sweet health benefits. Bernie was telling everybody that no matter what you got now, what we're going to give you is going to be better. It's going to be better. It's going to cost you less. It can't. I'm not going to go into it, but it can't. It won't. But it's going to be better. Well, Bernie was pissing off the union people, and other Democrats were attacking Bernie about this thing, saying, you know, I don't want to take away union benefits. You worked hard. You fought hard. You negotiated those deals. You should not have to give those up. And Bernie started dropping a little bit in the polls. So being the ever-principled socialist that Bernie Sanders is, he's changed his mind. The Washington Post headline, Senator Bernie Sanders changes how Medicare for All plans treat union contracts in face of opposition by organized labor. What? Senator Bernie Sanders announced a key change to his Medicare for All insurance plans Wednesday, a move meant to assuage fears on the part of organized labor, whose support is being heatedly sought by all the candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination. Labor representatives have expressed concerns to candidates publicly and to campaign staffs privately that a single-payer system could negatively affect their benefits, which in many cases offer better coverage than private plans. They are private plans, okay? These reporters are dumb. I grew up in a union household. My dad drove a forklift for General Motors for 30 years. We had Blue Cross Blue Shield. That is a private plan. But they don't know that. They seem to think that maybe they're talking about individual plans or plans in other private sector areas, non-union sectors, which the Democrats don't care about, as I explained. But they're all private plans. These union shops are not setting up their own insurance companies to administer their benefits package. That's not the way it works. The change announced Wednesday would effectively give organized labor more negotiating power than other consumers would have under his plan by forcing employers to pay out any money they save to union members in the other benefits. One of the primary concerns union members and leaders have raised about Senator's Medicare for All plan is that they negotiated health coverage under the current system, in some cases, ceding salary in exchange for those benefits. Everybody makes that freaking trade-off. That's just the way the world works. Under Sanders' new wrinkle, is it just a wrinkle? Those unions could renegotiate their contracts under the supervision of the National Labor Relations Board. Unions will still be able to negotiate for and provide wraparound services for other coverages not duplicative of the benefits established under Medicare for All. Bernie is hedging here. Bernie is basically saying, well, you can keep, union guys, you can kind of keep your plan. You can keep it as a wraparound, a supplemental, whatever. But Bernie has already been on record, unambiguously saying that there would be no need for any private plans, that Medicare for All will cover everything for everybody and it will be wonderful. So why this? And why say, all right, well, then you can reopen contracts. The president of the United States is going to make contracts null and void and say you can reopen them? Where's that power come from? Moreover, when he's talking about you can use it as a wraparound service, Bernie is also on record as saying, look, Medicare for All won't cover things like nose jobs. So if you want a nose job, you can have private insurance for that. Remember that clip?
And what happens to those insurance companies after your plan is implemented?
If you want cosmetic surgery, we under Medicare for All, we cover all basic health care needs. I suppose if you want to make yourself look a little bit more beautiful, you want to work on that nose, your ears, they can do that.
But so basically Blue Cross Blue Shield would be reduced to nose jobs?
Something like that.
I've been around enough union guys to know that there's not a lot of desire for plastic surgery in many union shops around the country. A tummy tuck here and there, maybe. You know, a little bit of liposuction. Is this what Bernie is telling the union guys? Don't worry. I'm going to give you everything you got. Now it's going to be so much better. So much better. I mean, you'll have to wait. You'll probably die waiting. But while you die waiting, you can take that waistline in 3 to 4 inches. Let's face it. You could lose a few pounds. We'll hook a Hoover up to your belly button. We'll call it a day. We'll just suck that out there. You can get that. You can negotiate that. There's your big union deal. That's the benefit of being in your union. Good luck selling that, Bernie. I want to be there when he goes to a union hall and says that. Or when somebody, some enterprising journalist who doesn't work for the Washington Post because they aren't going to do it, looks at this plan and remembers, hey, wait a second. Bernie said that he basically going to relegate all the private health insurance to nose jobs and ear tucks. And now he's telling union people, don't worry, you can keep your plans as a wraparound coverage, even though we're going to cover everything. I don't think that's going to go over very well. I'm not sure Bernie thought this through, but I do believe that Bernie is thinking that and hoping that his audience will not think it through. That's really the trick. Oh, but it's not just Democrats who are making news. Does the name Joe Walsh mean anything to you? If you're of a certain age, you think of the drunkard guitarist for the Eagles or the guy who did Life's Been Good. It's about the only... I know there are other Joe Walsh songs, and don't start sending emails. I'm not making a Joe Walsh joke here, although one time I did convince my best friend that the song was Life's Been Good to Me Thus Far and Not So Far, and I had him going for like 5 minutes on it. Well, this Joe Walsh is a former one-term congressman who is apparently a radio host. I love these people. I'm a nationally syndicated radio host. Well, what stations are you on? I don't know. I tried to find a station list for his shows, and you can't find it, which makes me think that they are stations where if you're not directly sitting in the parking lot of where their transmitter is, you're not going to be able to pick up the signal. And the 5-watt powerhouse, W suck. Joe Walsh, according to Politico, is considering running a primary challenge against President Trump. Again, you're sitting there, who the hell is Joe Walsh? What's going on here? Because it would make sense if it were the drunken guitar player for the Eagles. Like, I can do that. I'm going to run for president. Why not? But no, this guy is apparently a former congressman. They write, Joe Walsh, the flame-throwing conservative radio talk show host. Again, have you ever heard of this guy? And former Illinois congressman is moving towards challenging President Donald Trump in a Republican primary, calling the president an unfit divider-in-chief and claiming that the party is craving an alternative. The party's craving an alternative? President's at or near all-time highs for support among Republicans, but they're clamoring. Who he's really talking to is he's talking to Bill Kristol. Bill Kristol, who looks like... He also looks like a weeble, is out there trying desperately to find somebody to try to make him relevant again. It's not going to happen. This is the guy who brought you Evan McMullen last. Remember Evan McMullen? Evan McMullen. He was the big, you know, the great white hope of Bill Kristol. He was going to put all his support behind, he did put all his support behind Evan McMullen. The objective was to cost Trump Utah because McMullen apparently was a Mormon. And if you can cost Trump Utah, you can prevent Trump from getting the presidency. That didn't work out in any sense. McMullen was a blip on the radar in Utah. Donald Trump would have won the presidency without Utah. But Bill Kristol never lets anything stand in the way of him and his narrative, nor him and the potential to get his hands on a whole bunch of other people's money. Walsh, Politico continues, told Politico on Wednesday that he was confident he could secure the resources and support to mounting a challenge against the president and that if he ran, he would announce in short order. While Walsh on Wednesday would not yet confirm he would enter the primary, two sources who spoke to him said he was privately confirming he would announce his presidential bid this weekend. Ooh, so if you've got weekend plans, keep them, because this isn't going to impact your life at all. There technically is a Republican challenger in the primary to Donald Trump, a guy named William Weld, who's a former governor of Massachusetts, who is as a he could be running in the Democratic primary and you wouldn't notice it. But now Joe Walsh wants to throw his hat in the ring. Go ahead, throw your hat in the ring. Throw your head in the ring. Who cares? The only good thing that could come out of this is that a job in radio will open up for somebody who's willing to relocate to wherever the hell Joe Walsh is and take over his times. I think I looked it up on his website. He's on live in Chicago from 9 to midnight. If you're on after 9, you don't count in ratings. Let me just say that again. You don't count in ratings. The station stops counting the ratings. They still get them, but it doesn't matter. They don't publicize them. They put out the people from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's what they sell advertising on. The late night shows and the overnight shifts, no matter how wildly popular, if they're super wildly popular, they might be able to get good ad rates. But you're just a filler because radio stations have to broadcast 24 hours a day. Joe Walsh is a non-entity in the radio business, but he's going to give up that. He's hammering a check, so you got to give him credit for that. Somebody's paying him money to do whatever it is he does. I do know somebody who was asked to if they would be interested in replacing him, not because he was running for president. This was about a year ago, because nobody was listening to Joe Walsh, and you could just plug in a test pattern and probably pull down the same numbers that he's getting. But that's neither here nor there. I just find it interesting that he thinks, and there is this push, there is this delusion amongst Never Trumpers that there is this hunger for somebody else. If they just find the right person, and of course you have to be incredibly arrogant to think, well, I'm the right person, let's do this thing. So I encourage Joe Walsh to run, if only to free up a radio job for somebody who might be able to garner an audience. Ugh. It's so. I don't know what happens to people with this Trump derangement syndrome, but Walsh was a supporter of the president. Now he's just mean. He's a bully, saying meany things. Get over yourselves, people. Seriously, I don't think Donald Trump is going to lose any sleep over a possible primary challenge by Joe Walsh. President isn't actually losing any sleep over anything. It was a subject of a Fredo Cuomo monologue. I cut it up, and I'm not going to bore you with it because he's insane and he's incredibly stupid. He wants the president to lose sleep because he's mad that the president isn't aging like other presidents have in office. It's just so stupid. It's not even worth talking about. But speaking of stupid, there is some stupid that is worth talking about. The Economist. You see their ads on TV every once in a while. They have a very important piece out there about how poor people are destroying the planet. So, sort of. It actually is. The headline of it is Global Meat Eating is on the Rise, Bringing Surprising Benefits. The subheadline, As Africans Get Richer, They Will Eat More Meat and Live Longer, Healthier Lives. And you think, oh, that's good. That's great. The story is things were different 28 years ago when Zhu Zhenye and her husband moved from the coastal province of Shandong to Beijing and began selling fresh pork. It goes on from there to detail their adventures, but the gist of it can be summed up in a video that they tweeted out. And the video is just all closed caption. There's no actual words. It's just music. But the tweet tells you the gist of the story. The tweet reads, quote, "More poor people are eating meat around the world. That means they will live longer, healthier lives. But it is bad news for the environment." Could you imagine getting this assignment? You're the reporter. You're a young cub reporter, still wet behind the ears, fresh out of college, ready to go out and make a difference in the world. And your editor says, hey, I've got a story for you about the rise of eating meat in third world countries and how that's making people's lives better. They're getting healthier. They're getting more balanced diets. They're not starving to death anymore. And you sit there and you think, oh, this is great. It's a real feel-good story. It's a good thing. I can report on something good. Finally, some positive news. And then the editor says, and I want you to frame it in how cow farts are destroying the planet. More meat eaters means more cows, which means more cow farts. And therefore, people living longer, healthier lives is a bad thing for the planet, and therefore, it's bad. Now, actually, somebody fresh out of college would have probably already drawn that conclusion themselves because they are of a hive mind, these leftists, and they believe that human beings should be sacrificed on the altar of the planet god. But as a normal human being reading that story, this is good news. Congratulations, you're living longer, healthier lives. You're no longer emaciated with distended stomachs and starving to death. You don't look like an olive on a couple of toothpicks anymore. Congratulations. You're less prone to disease now thanks to your balanced diet. No, no, no. That's a bad thing in the world of the left, because it's bad for the environment. As Eric Erickson put it on Twitter, wokeness gets closer and closer to genocide. These damn poor people screwing up the environment by living. And that's really the attitude here. Stop eating. I understand you're living a better life, but stop it. You have to be sacrificed. You have to die of famine or disease, malnutrition, because it's good for the planet. These people are, I can't even say they're nuts. They're evil. That's evil that you would even think that. Speaking of evil, of course, to the left, this country is fundamentally racist and will forever be fundamentally racist. We have to remake America. We must destroy it because its foundation is rotten. It's like the property, a house the property brothers bought, where they say, so, hey, just put down $1 million on this house. It'll be great. We can easily do all the renovations and have, oh, by the way, now that you've cut the check and you own this house, we did a little bit of digging. We did the bare minimum amount of research, and we discovered that the foundation is cracked, rotten, and the whole building is about to collapse. It's going to add a little bit to your reno budget. Every episode, they're like, oh my God, I didn't realize it. Did you not do a home inspection, dude? Isn't that your freaking job? Or at least to advise a thorough home inspection. One of you is in construction. Couldn't you have, I don't know, looked before you convinced somebody to put their entire life savings down on this brownstone somewhere? Well, the New York Times is, they set out to destroy this country, of course, because the left all works in conjunction with this. You get AOC tweeting about how the Electoral College is racist. You get the New York Times doing a whole series of stuff on how everything is racist and needs to be destroyed. And you've got Democratic candidates running around the country saying everything is racist. It's nuts. Well, this New York Times piece, this is part of their 1619 project. The headline says, "The sugar that saturates the American diet has a barbaric history as the white gold that fueled slavery." I thought it was cotton that was the white gold that fueled slavery. But everything fueled slavery if you are a leftist, and everything is evil. And it goes on about how sugar is killing people and it's making people fat, and it's particularly impacting the black community. And it's doubly evil for impacting the black community because of slavery. It really is a stretch. So 400 years ago, a decision that nobody alive had anything remotely to do with is the root of all evil today and must mean that the entire system must be destroyed. Listen to how the New York Times just frames this 1619 project. Quote, "The 1619 project is a major initiative from the New York Times, observing the 400th anniversary of the beginning of American slavery. It aims to reframe the country's history, understanding that 1619 is our true founding, and placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of black Americans at the very center of the story we tell ourselves about who we are." I had nothing to do with slavery. I don't care what happened 400 years ago. To be perfectly honest with you, I'm so sick of hearing about how it's the root of all evil today and everything is fundamental about it today of what happened 400 years ago. You know what happened 400 years ago? commerce was introduced to slavery. Slavery was invented on the continent of Africa. The people who were brought here in bondage, as awful as that was, were more often than not sold into slavery by people who looked like them. They were sold to the evil white man by people who looked like them. Slavery was not new. Whitey did not introduce slavery to Africa. Whitey introduced ships to Africa to import it to another continent. Yes, none of it was good, but to pretend that the first part of it didn't happen and didn't exist is to lie and deny history. It wasn't a bunch of white people with nets running through the plains of Africa, abducting people in their sleep. It was fellow tribesmen, other tribes, sometimes leaders of tribes who just didn't like people or wanted to make some money selling people into slavery. Africa was not a utopia. Nowhere on earth has ever been a utopia. Human history, which is what we should be concerned with, is riddled with awful people doing awful things. That was kind of what you had to do to get yourself in a position of power. So to pretend that 1619 is some watershed moment in America, it's really the founding of this country because that's when the first slaves came over here, and everything is rooted in slavery and everything is evil from, well, everything to sugar, the Electoral College, whatever you got. One article bitches about the freeway system in Atlanta and how that is racist. You honestly cannot make this stuff up. But what they're trying to do, the New York Times spells it out plainly. It aims to reframe the country's history. They want to rewrite history because, as I've said this week, nobody will voluntarily fundamentally transform something that they're actually like, something they're actually proud of. If you like this country, if you love this country, you're not going to settle and or accept this country being ripped apart and remade. You're not going to accept the Constitution being used as a doormat. If you're a mindless drone liberal who thinks that everything is evil in the world and we've got to do something, the Constitution was founded on slavery, then you'd reopen to it. So they're setting out in a concerted effort across the left to try and convince you that everything good has a foundation that is bad and evil, and therefore it must be destroyed. I don't care so much about how we got here. I care about where we're going. It's much more important. We can learn from what we've done to get here as a species, but since we didn't do it, we shouldn't be held accountable to it. Since we can't change it, let's not obsess on it. Let's worry about where we go next rather than where we've been. That's just me. I'm not a reactionary, emotionally driven, unstable, unhinged, lunatic leftist. I'm just a guy talking to a stray cat sitting on his couch, which probably isn't making my case very strongly. Anyway, we're out of time for today. Thank you for listening again. Email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. Get in your entries by for the Charlie Hurt book, let's just say by noon tomorrow, shall we? That'll be the deadline. Noon on Thursday for the Charlie Hurt book. The winners will be announced on Friday's program. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. It is, I'm trying to think what day it is. Thursday. Good Lord, it's Thursday already. Tomorrow is Friday. I'll see you then.
Nothing like the Medal of Honor. I wanted one, but they told me I don't qualify, Woody.